Good morning, Brian Mazeroski with you on WBEN. Looking lovely out there. Sun's shining, and we're ready to get some warm temperatures back in here after the snow all week. Can you believe that? The snow all weekend long. I had a couple words for it. Can't repeat them here. Anyways, we're moving on to talk about something else. A lot of schools going on spring break this week. A lot of extra time, maybe extra time to do a little reading. And that's kind of what we're talking about right now. My guest this morning, Zach Rausch, who's joining us. Now, there's a new book that's out, I believe, Zach, officially tomorrow is when this drops. Bookstores across the nation and wherever you want to buy your book. The Anxious Generation by Jonathan Haidt, who, if you've been following some of his work, you might kind of guess where this book is going. But the lead researcher on this project and a lot more is Zach Rausch, who joins us now. Zach, thanks for being with us here in Buffalo.
Yeah, good morning. Thank you so much for having me on, and hello to all your listeners.
Yeah, well, Zach, I wanted to talk with you because I've been looking forward to reading this for quite some time, ever since it was announced. It kind of builds off of a lot of work that's been done, especially over the last 4 years or so, right? Dealing with kids, phones, how it's all working, which is kind of to say it doesn't seem to be all working, right? When we look at how this whole like social experiment is going, where every teenager has a phone in their hands. You've helped out with this new book, The Anxious Generation, which kind of dives into this issue. And I want to start with that. You know, kids and phones. It's all over the place. Maybe as young as 10, maybe even younger. But certainly by the teenage years, it seems like every single kid in America, although it's not true, it's not everyone, but it seems like every kid in America has a smartphone in their hands. What are some of the things you're kind of noticing with that over the last few years?
Yeah, well, thank you again for having me on. And just to give everybody a bit of a benchmark and an understanding of where we're coming from. So John Haidt and I we're trying to understand a mental health collapse that happened in the early 2010s among adolescents in the United States. And as I was doing this research with him, we realized that what happened was that major depressive episodes among American teens had more than doubled since 2010. Emergency department visits for self-harm episodes have more than tripled for the youngest teen girls, ages 10 to 14. And then we realized that this was not just happening in the United States. This was happening in the UK, in Australia, New Zealand, Canada, and in many other countries around the world. And we realized that something really big changed. Something happened in the lives of teenagers right around the year of 2010. And we were like, what could that be? And we've spent the past few years trying to understand, what is causing this rapid deterioration in teen mental health. And over again, what we've found is that it is the movement of of social life, of teenage social life, that is centered on smartphones and social media. And I could talk a lot more about this, but that movement into this world and just the quantity of time has really transformed childhood in a way that is unrecognizable today.
Have you been able to kind of pinpoint what because we all say, yeah, it's the phones. Yeah, it's social media. Definitely, it's ruining the kids. What can you do? yeah. But have you been able to kind of pinpoint or zero in on what is it about the phone? What is it about social media that seems to be having this negative effect?
Yeah, so we can summarize the book in one sentence, and that's that we've been overprotecting kids in the real world and underprotecting them online. And so I just wanted to put that out there first, because we're making a two-factor theory about what is happening to young people. Now, the underprotection in the real world is where we get into smartphones and social media. And so you're about, like, what is causing this? What is it about these platforms? Well, what we have to look is what changed right around 2010. So before 2010, we all had, social media. We had Facebook, MySpace. But the thing is you could get onto it, onto your desktop computer, onto a laptop, but it was typically at home. If you were a teenager, it was typically the family computer. And then in 2007, things start to change because we get the iPhone. And what the iPhone does is it starts to allow you to pair social media on your phone together. And what that does is that it creates a whole new business system, because in 2008, you get the App Store. And what happens there is now companies are competing with each other to create more engaging and addictive applications that allow you to be constantly connected to a user. And so by 2010, now you have a smartphone full of apps that is tied in your pocket that you can carry around all day. And what happens is now you have all of these new design features. So things like push notifications. So we start getting notified and buzzed throughout the day, which is like Pavlovian psychology, where you are being buzzed and you create a dependency and association with this thing in your pocket. And so companies are able to pull you into this virtual world 24/7. And it is that change. It is this movement from, you know, you can use technology when you want to now you have an appendage essentially to your body that is keeping you there almost all the time. And so it's that, and then plus you get these new features onto social media, like the like button, which comes out in 2009, the retweet button, also in 2009, the front-facing camera in 2010. And what all of these new features do is it turns these platforms from things that were once about social connection and networking, so they were social networking systems, into social media platforms, meaning you're now standing on a stage performing for an audience, often of strangers, could be hundreds, could be thousands, to be judged. And it is that kind of change in the way that we're interacting that is really harmful to a developing brain, that you are putting out images, videos of yourself to be metrified, to be and to be compared against, and to be platformed. And that that is just one of many mechanisms through which this has really harmed kids, especially girls going through puberty.
You know, it's one of a number of these things that you've pointed out over the years, that a lot of the work in the book and what I've read of it so far is pointing out, where it seems like there's a lot of things that if we all just took a step back and thought about it for just 2 seconds, you know, there are things that it would make total sense. And that you just touched on one of them, where this whole idea that, you know, oh, well, you need to be on social media. That's where all my friends are. That's how we communicate. I mean, it's just not true, right? Like, who communicates on social media with friends? Like, what conversation with friends or a peer group really takes place on social media? I mean, it's not really conversations. There's pictures posted, there's comments, but
right,
all that's still done on a text message or in person.
Absolutely, and this is so crucial to our argument, is that we're not saying that all aspects of technology and technological communication are bad. There are certain kinds of platforms and business incentives and systems that are problematic. And, you know, texting for the most part is totally fine. You know, it is one thing, though, when we're constantly being notified throughout the day, thousands of texts, like that is completely overwhelming and hard to pay attention. But it's very different from being on TikTok or being on Instagram, where we have larger quantities of connections, but those connections are very shallow and superficial because they're just way too many. And it's designed, again, to be a platform for you to be judged, not to foster healthy human relationships. And that is by design. These platforms are designed not for the well-being of users. It's designed to keep you engaged, keep you hooked, in order to take your attention and sell it to advertisers. That's the business model. And if adults want to use the platforms, that's totally fine. We just need to rethink, do we want 11-year-olds, 12-year-olds, 13-year-olds to be using these platforms 5 hours a day, 6 hours a day? Because that's the average amount of time now that teens are spending just on social media platforms.
It's kind of wild when you think about it. We're speaking with Zach Rausch, who's a lead researcher on the book, The Anxious Generation, which is released tomorrow. You know, you mentioned that it hits on a couple of themes of what we're doing with our kids overprotecting in the real world, underprotecting online. And you mentioned that overprotecting in the real world. We see so many examples of it in day-to-day life of, you know, things that happened 30 years ago that were commonplace in childhood that now seem to be, like, way too dangerous for anyone. Last week, we were talking about babysitting, right? You know, babies used to have a 12-year-old babysitter. Now, in some states, it's illegal to have someone under or 12 years old alone in the house. It's wild. And it's especially crazy that to think we're so overprotective, yet are so oblivious or just want to stay away from this smartphone issue, to kind of put the two of them together, it's nuts. Now, in this book, you lay out four new norms.
Yeah.
No social media before 16, more free play in the real world. And then these two that I'm sure are the ones that are going to get the most pushback, right? No smartphones before high school and phone-free schools. When people are kind of confronted with those two ideas, what's the reaction?
Yeah, well, let me just tell you a quick story. And actually, it's an experiment that was just done that I think really highlights the problem that we're facing and helps us understand what kind of solutions I think are going to work. So in 2023, an experiment was done on about 1,000 American college students, and the participants were asked how much money it would take for them to get off of TikTok or Instagram for a month. And the answer was about $50. So they said, $50 and I'll get off for a month. Then they asked that question again, but they said, how much money would it take for you to be off Instagram or TikTok for a month? But what if we got everybody else to do it as well, everyone else in your community? And they said, the participants said, we will pay you, the researchers, to do this. So it was the absolute inverse response, which is showing that kids feel trapped. They feel like they have to be on these platforms because everybody else is on them. But if they had the choice, they wouldn't actually want to be on there. And this is the problem that we're facing. It's called the collective action problem, where because everybody else is doing it, then I need to be on it. But nobody actually wants to be doing it. And so the solution is that we need to change group norms and dynamics. And this is why we think phone-free schools are so powerful. Because not only is it it's an opportunity to change an entire network, like within a school where everybody gets 7 hours of childhood back, where you're not faced with the social pressure that keeps everybody on these phones. So that's one thing. And the second with phone-free schools, what's so powerful about them and important is that every teacher we've talked to is so sick of the phones. The phones are constantly interrupting classrooms. We're seeing declines in test scores, and they are constantly in conflict with their students to manage this stuff. And so what we're saying is, let's go to school, put the phones in a phone pouch or in a phone locker at the beginning of the day, and then you get them back at the end of the day, and that's it. We reduce conflict among teachers and students, and we try to give at least 7 hours of childhood back to kids. And teachers, most teachers we've spoken to are in high support of this. Parents are sick of the phones. So we've got a lot of really positive responses. The biggest opposition we have is resignation. People feeling that, you know, we're too far gone. There's nothing we can do about this. We have to adapt to this new technology. What can we do? Well, we're arguing in this book is that there is a lot that we can do, and it's very, very doable. And phone-free schools, we think, is an easy and first step to get there.
Is it resignation, or is there like an active pushback? Because there's a couple things I've noticed. You know, number one, I think it's so strange we have this one thing that everyone seems to be in somewhat agreement on. You know, people might agree to differing, you know, maybe it's number one on your list, maybe it's down there, but everyone seems to agree that there is some sort of impact social media and the phones are having on kids' mental health. Yet, no psychological organization has, you know, issued any sort of warning or statement against phones, you know, like they do about so many other things, right? None of them are coming out and saying like, oh, we must, you know, get rid of the phones in a school setting or limit the screen time or anything like that. Like there's, it's just odd that it's the one thing there hasn't been a warning about. And then parents, you know, so many of them, and I'm sure I'll hear from some of them, you know, about 10 minutes from now on our line here, say, well, no, my kid has to have, it's for safety. Yeah. They have to have a phone in school. I have to be able to get a hold of them. It seems like there is some sort of active pushback there.
Yeah. Great questions. So I think I have three things to say here. So the first is that, you know, we don't have to get rid of phones entirely. We can use flip phones, right? Millennials had flip phones. This is a way that that's a communication device, one-on-one, and we communicate with, you know, your kids could still go to school and you can still be in touch with them. So flip phones are a great option. It is the movement to the smartphones that are really what we believe to be particularly problematic. The second point is that there is a lot of movement now. So we've seen, for example, in New York City, they've made quite a strong statement around social media being a public health hazard. In the UK, they just passed a law to bring about phone-free schools. And, you know, there is just a movement of two UK mothers who started a WhatsApp group to delay smartphones till 14. Within an hour, they had over 1,000 parents on this WhatsApp group. Now it's over 30,000. So there is a huge hunger for this. And part three is that you're right, that there's a lot of fear and concern because we've gotten so habituated to be in constant contact with our kids and with other people. But what is crucial is that we need to give kids that autonomy and independence in order to grow and confident in themselves, in their own independence. And having, there's a phrase that Lenore Skenazy, who is in charge of an organization called Let Grow, which is all about fostering independence and responsibility among kids, calls the smartphone the longest umbilical cord ever made. It never allows us to fully let go and let our kids thrive out in the world. And even though the world is a scary place or can feel like a scary place, this is how we become competent and full adults. And it is scary, but we need to trust, we need to build that trust, which allows our kids to grow.
Well, Zach, I really do appreciate the time this morning, and thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you so much. Yeah, and if your listeners want to learn more, you can find us at anxiousgeneration.com, where we're starting a movement to free the anxious generation to implement the four norms that we were just talking about.
All right, well, hopefully you have a lot of people interested. Zach Rausch, lead researcher for The Anxious Generation, the book that comes out tomorrow, joining us here on WBEN. What did you think about what you heard? 803-0930 to give me a call, weigh in on a comment. I like what he said there, the smartphone, the longest umbilical cord ever made. That sound right to you? And we're talking so much. Kids are bringing their parents to job interviews. Is this the reason why? 803-0930, Brian Mazurowski. I'll be back here after the news on WBEN.
I love this.
Good morning. Brian Mazurowski with you on W. If you hear anything behind me, the lovely window washers are here in the cherry picker, squeegeeing everything right behind me. It's just after 9:30 on WBEN. If you're just joining me in the first half hour of the show, I was joined by Zach Rausch, who is the lead researcher on a new book that's out tomorrow, but it's already getting a good amount of publicity. You might have seen the author, Jonathan Haidt, in a lot of places. The Anxious Generation. That's the book that's out tomorrow. And the entire, I think they dropped something. The entire book is kind of an argument on rolling back what they say, what they call the phone-based childhood. And why this should be happening. They lay out some steps into how to make kids kids again, how to take back this, you know, quote unquote, epidemic of mental health that's been caused by smartphones and kids being on these social media platforms. And they lay out four pretty simple steps as to how they think that can happen. They think people will get on board with it. Well, will you get on board with it? 803-0930 to join me here on WBEN. The four new norms they lay out. We talked with Zach about this. No smartphones before high school. No social media before 16. Phone-free schools. And phone-free schools, that doesn't mean, hey, you're not allowed to use your school. Or no phones during class, but you can take them out in the hall in between classes and text or anything, or have them at cafeteria. No. It means no phones throughout the entire school day. And the fourth, more independence for kids, including free play and responsibility in the real world. What do you think about those? Is that something you're striving for with your kids? Can it happen in 2024? Will it have the buy-in? 803-0930 to join me here on WBEN. You know, he said a couple of interesting things, one of which were, as parents, overprotecting in the real world and underprotecting online. And that's part of the twofold problem he sees with how this is going on. And it does, that comment makes a lot of sense. How we've reached that point in practice makes absolutely no sense, right? We were sitting here last week with Joe and I. We were talking about babysitters and the lack of a team babysitters. You know, what happened to them? Where'd they all go, right? You used to have 12-year-olds, 13-year-olds babysit. Now, I mean, it still exists. It's not like that doesn't happen at all anymore. But we've gone a sharp turn away from that in about 10, 15 years' time, from entrusting young teens to watch your kids to now having laws in states. We pointed out Illinois, where if you're under 14, you can't be left home alone. Someone could be arrested. Right? Like, how did we make such a switch? So that overprotecting in the real world, you know, letting your kids outside to go out and play without, you know, how do we overprotect so much yet we are willingly handing over to kids this thing that we all are nodding our heads in agreement is a bad thing for their social and emotional health? How many times do you hear the comment, think about what your Easter is going to look like this Sunday? What's it going to look like? What are all the kids going to be doing? What are all the teenage kids going to be doing? If it's like anything, you know, we've heard in the past, it's they'll all be huddled, you know, somewhere around in a corner, nobody speaking to anybody, head in a phone for the entire time. And everybody's been complaining about it for 10 years and saying, oh, you know, that's terrible. And the same people complaining about it are the same people putting the phone in the hand of, I mean, I know that teenager doesn't have a good job. They can't afford that $1,000 phone, much less a $60 phone bill every month. Well, maybe they can. Well, they're certainly not babysitting. I'll say that. 803-0930. Someone asking if the cherry picker is a JLG. Let me turn around and look. Nope, doesn't appear to be. It's something else entirely. But all right, 803-0930. We'll look at some of the comments on the text board this morning. Someone saying, parents, it's scared parents scaring the kids. And yeah, I think that's a big part of the issue is you have parents who are too. What else did Zach say with us? He was, what do we have here? Oh, the cell phone, the smartphone, he called it the longest umbilical cord ever made. I thought that, is that true? I think there's something to that. The longest umbilical, you know, everyone has a phone, a smartphone, cell phone, whatever, you know, type it might be. And ever since you got that in the pocket of your kid, you were able to keep tabs on them like never before. And maybe that's not so much a good thing. I don't think in the same breath that you can really scoff at these stories that we've had in the past few months. You know, what have we, of people bringing their parents to job interviews, right? Having their parents help them with their college application. Living with their parents until the age of 35. Like, all these things, right? I don't think you can scoff at that while at the same time kind of, in a way, enabling the behavior. If you're giving your kid a phone in the name of keeping tabs on them 24/7, and they become accustomed to always having somebody at the ready, here, well, tricky situation here at my job. Let me just text mom and see how I can get about this. You know, if that's the case, if you're enabling that to happen, then you're also kind of letting all the other stuff happen. 803-0930, back to the text board. Someone saying, remember the name of the phone, smartphone, and they're seeing their parents on them all the time, and their friends all have them. I see it going nowhere. Makes me sad. Everyone else, everyone needs to grow a pair as an adult. Phones off, either in a basket at the door, not even in the house. Find an activity for them to do. Make sure the whole family sticks together when you're out on the holiday. I mean, yeah, I could be a good rule around the table for this upcoming weekend. Maybe. We'll go to the phones, 803-0930. Julia in Buffalo joining us with a little bit more on this. All right, Julia, how's it going? Good morning.
Hi, it's going really good. I'm glad I caught you. I love your show. What I wanted to say is that I think it's really, I agree with the author that about the umbilical cord issue. I think what's happened is that parents have gotten so nervous about their kids being in school since the rise of school shootings. You know, and the number just keeps increasing. The shootings that go on when they used to be able to send their kids to a mall and say, well, go to the mall, have a good time, go to the movies. And now they can't do that. Well, they feel hesitant about doing that. And I'm going on 55 in May, and I remember taking a babysitting class when I was 12 at the community center across the street so that I could be qualified to take care of kids at, you know, at the age of 12. And I thought, oh, this is great. And I didn't think a big deal about it. It was a great responsibility. And I just see the times are changing. And parents, you know, I have a niece who says, has to tell her grandmother and her mother, do not contact me between 7 a.m. and 4 p.m. because I'm in class. Now, don't you think that a parent would know not to contact their kid during that time? But the parents get so anxious, and the last thing I'm going to say is that there are apps out there, and there's a big market in creating apps that will allow teachers to use the cell phone in the classroom as a teaching tool, but there's not a lot of teachers knowing that. It's very innovative. So anyway, that's all I wanted to say, and I do agree with you.
Hey, Julia, thanks for the call, and I'm so glad you did because I was waiting for your call. Not you specifically, but I was waiting for the person who was going to call in and say this because I've just, it's the number one comment you get from parents. Now, if you listen to the interview with Zach, I brought up to him, you know, he is of the mind, he thinks that people are ready for this. They want to. They just feel like there's nothing you can do. It's like a defeatist attitude. And I said, I'm not too sure about that because I think maybe more than he does, more than Jonathan Haidt does, the authors of this book, I think that there are people kind of actively pushing against this to happen. You know, and I mentioned, you know, some of these psychological organizations that you read about all the time, the, you know, APA, the American Psychiatric Association, National Association for School Psychologists, School Counselor Association. You know, all of those groups that have no problem releasing statements about everything. I mean, geez, they all have a statement on climate change and how it's impacting mental health. But this one thing that we're all so sure on that is really devastating, if not, you know, something else with kids, they're all silent. Why is that? I don't, now, you know, maybe the person who's not, it's not a conspiracy theory, but, you know, the person who is a little bit of a skeptic about these things, who doesn't really look at this as everything being on the up and up, you know, they might say, well, hey, maybe they like the phone because it's causing all this mental anguish that they can then, you know, fix and whatever. But that to me shows that it's some sort of active push away from this idea. And then you have the comment that we just took on the phone, which is the one I hear all the time. And we actually have another one on our text board, right? Who texted this in? Where we have phone, it's about safety. What are they doing about school safety until we could be 100% sure no gun situations in the school? And my response to this is always, you know, what do you think the phone is going to do? You know what? It makes a pretty bad shield if that's what we're after here. I mean, it's very small. It would be very hard to block anything with that. Communication. Schools have communication. There's phones in every classroom. There are ways to know that information as a parent. This, like, what if situation that everyone has in their head that doesn't really make sense to me is somehow outweighing the, I mean, huge downside that we see actually playing out every single day in classrooms across the U.S. And this caller mentioned, you know, well, they could have a phone in there, but, you know, don't use phone etiquette. You shouldn't be talking during class. It doesn't work that way. You know, inside this book, they point out one of these things that kids notice. It's not just, and why, when they say phone-free school, they mean phone-free school. They don't just mean no phones being allowed to be used in the classroom, but you can have your phone on you or anything like that. No, phone locked away, not in use throughout the entire school day. And one of the reasons for that is because what they've noticed is kids are in class sitting there with a phone in their pocket and being anxious about it. And the pull of the smartphone, right? I mean, think about any conversation you've had with anyone under the age of 20. The pull of the smartphone is weighing more on their mind than whatever is being talked about in class. And they're seeing, oh, if one kid is seen taking a phone out in class, well, they have to check on social media. What is everybody talking about? Now they're thinking about, I can't wait to get out of class and check the phone to see what's going on. You need to remove that entirely to regain focus to where it's supposed to be, at the head of the class. There was another new story I was reading this morning. It was in The Economist. New numbers show failing standards in American high schools. And I'm wondering if these two are related. They show, I mean, it is a, the chart's so sad, it's hilarious. It's one of those things. Graduation inflation chart. And they have one line, it shows the high school graduation rate. And the other line shows SAT scores. And high school graduation rate, after about right at about 2010, starts to skyrocket. SAT scores at the same time going down. Well, how can that be true, right? How can everybody be so smart that we're graduating high school like never before, yet flunking the SAT like never before at the same time? It just doesn't add up, does it? And well, maybe it's a little bit of a dumbing down because no one's paying attention anymore to what's being said up there. And now we have to reduce it to the lowest common denominator just to, in order to get something through to a brain of a kid that's still, even though it's not in their hands, it's in their back pocket, they're just thinking about a smartphone or what the new Snapchat is for the 40 minutes that they're in class. 803-0930 to join me here on WBEN. On our text board, someone's saying, a corrections officer, you don't have phones in jail for a reason. You have to stay alert. You cannot be distracted. Students shouldn't be distracted, and they should be staying alert in school. Somebody else, as a police officer, kids calling their parents during any sort of threat in school causes us more problems than they could ever help. A couple of the texts into 803-0930 there. I love the what he said about, and by the way, there is a difference. You know, this is advocating for this book and who we just spoke with earlier, advocating for phone-free schools. And the caller brought up, you know, what if a kid's at a shopping mall or a situation somewhere else? Well, the mall isn't the school, right? So in that situation, it would be fine. A flip phone, right, would be fine. You can get into contact whenever you need to. Walking around a mall, walking around some other public place. But it's the school where you don't really need that to happen. We'll go back to the phones. Todd and Elma joining us on WBEN. Good morning, Todd.
Good morning. So following that person's theory, A, we should have either armed teachers or, you know, somebody that's armed in the school and not make it a gun-free zone, because clearly if they're worried about defending the kids, the phone's not going to stop anything. It would be interesting to get a report from someone like that on that theory, because if you're worried about keeping the kids safe, the phone ain't going to do it.
Well, Todd, thanks for the call. I mean, to me, it's just, it's one of those arguments that doesn't really hold a lot of water. It's just kind of one of the feel-good things, right? And that's when it turns back to parents, like parents having to let go a little bit. Like, trust me, I'm touring another pre-K, right? Because we lost the lottery, you know, right after I get off the air here. And it's a scary thing, you know, the thought of sending my kid off to school for the day, sending him off to wherever, you know, he's away from you, in the hands of someone else, hopefully getting a good education, hopefully being a good student, being nice, sticking up for himself and others, you know, doing all these sorts of things that you hope. You got to have faith in it and not be checking in 24/7. You know, the safety thing, I just can't in my right mind think of a way that safety would outweigh something else, that where my kid would need a smartphone. Right, an emphasis on the smartphone part of things. We're not even necessarily talking about a flip phone, where my kid would need a smartphone before high school. I mean, I had a smartphone. My first one, I think, was my senior year of college. That's when I first had a smartphone that could do things on the internet. And somehow I saw it through. Somehow I survived all these situations. I had a flip phone in high school. Somehow we all kind of made it through. I don't know. Hey, if you want to hear that interview, it'll be up on demand in the BMAZ and Beamer tab of the podcast section. You got David coming up next, and Joe Beamer is in for Tom Bowerly this week. I'll be back here bright and early tomorrow on WBEN.